A diagnosis of breast cancer can cause a life-changing ripple effect of impact affecting those we love the most and those upon whom we lean for comfort and strength in the most challenging of times. My name is Aisling Hurley and I'm the CEO of Breast Cancer Ireland, and you're listening to More Than a Lump, a podcast that talks openly and honestly to a selection of guests about their very personal connections to breast cancer, be it through their career choice, their own first-hand experience of the disease, or through sharing the experience of close family members. My conversations will centre on how breast cancer has informed their perspective on life, love, family, health, their goals, and indeed aspirations. Although each story is utterly unique, the one common thread that runs through each one is that breast cancer is more than a lump. This episode of More Than a Lump is proudly supported by CarePlus Pharmacy. CarePlus is Ireland's leading community pharmacy brand, offering expert advice and services for a healthier and happier you. You can find your nearest CarePlus on careplus.ie or follow them on social media for daily health and wellness tips. Rhonda Richardson's grandmother and her three aunts all had breast cancer, and so she had been attending the breast screening clinic since the age of 33. But sadly, at the age of 45, Rhonda herself was diagnosed with breast cancer. In today's podcast, I speak with Rhonda about her diagnosis and treatment and the decisions she and her sisters have taken following their positive screening for the BRCA2 gene. I'm joined by Dr. Reem Salman, consultant breast surgeon and a member of the Family Risk Assessment Clinic at Beaumont Hospital. Rhonda and Reem, you're both very welcome to our More Than a Lump podcast, and I'm delighted to have you both here in our studio to talk about this very important subject of breast cancer genetics and family history. I know from many women that I've spoken to over the years that a big concern once they come to terms with their own diagnosis is around the likelihood of their siblings or indeed children being diagnosed in the future. As well as that, they often find the whole area of going to be tested for the BRCA gene very traumatic. And I've come across many women diagnosed who put this off for quite a time. But before we go into this area in more detail, can I first talk to you, Rhonda, and ask you to explain to our listeners about your own breast cancer journey and that of your family history?
Thanks very much for inviting me. I was, as you said, on the breast clinic in the matter since I was 33, and I developed a breast cancer, but when I was at the age of 39, my consultant asked me, would I meet with the genetics team? So I met with the genetics team and we went through the whole family history. And he called me back then about 3 weeks later. I went back in to see him and he said, we've decided we won't genetically test you because my mother didn't have the breast cancer. So he put me on the extra screening, and it was through the two screenings that they found my cancer, where I was very, very lucky.
Okay. And so tell me a little bit about your family history. So your grandmother?
My maternal grandmother and my maternal aunt had breast cancer.
Okay.
And my paternal three aunts had breast cancer.
Ah.
So it's on my mother's side and my father's side.
Okay. Okay. And when you were diagnosed at the age of 45, that was from just your regular routine mammogram?
I had the mammogram in December and it was clear. And then I had my MRI in May, and that's when the DCSI showed up.
Okay. 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 And you were saying that your screening, so they were screening you, were you triaged, possibly were triaged as a higher risk given the family history?
Yeah.
Well, so you would be triaged every what, 6 months?
Yeah. You'd have a screening and then you'd have a clinic visit.
Okay.
So every 6 months.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And can you tell us a little bit about your treatment plan that you were given after you were diagnosed?
I was given radiation, 15 sessions of radiation.
Okay.
And that was it. I had two surgeries. My first surgery, when they went in the fourth time, they realized I had to come back in. It was gone in a little bit deeper.
Okay.
So they brought me back in again to do another surgery. And a week later, I got an infection in the breast. So that kind of delayed all my treatment plan. So I was supposed to start my treatment in September. So I couldn't start the radiation till November.
Okay, okay. And I suppose following your diagnosis then with your siblings,
yeah.
When were you advised that you should have the genetic test?
When I came back after my radiation, I came back to the consultant. And it was actually one of my aunts and my dad's sister said that she'd go and get the test done.
Okay.
So when I come back and said it to the consultant, he said no, that I was a candidate because I had had the breast cancer. So we decided then it would have been around December that I'd go and get it done. So they sent everything over to James's Hospital and then they contacted me. And I went into St. James's Hospital on April. It was a Good Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd done my genetic testing. And I waited 6 months for the results to come back. But when I went in that day to get the blood test done and see everybody, I kind of, when I went down to the labs to get the blood done, I kind of changed my mind. I didn't know whether I wanted to do it. And I said, I think I'll let my auntie do it. I don't think I can do it. Mm-hmm. And then, like, when you think of it, I said, I have to do it because I have sisters and I have brothers.
Yeah.
And they have children.
Yes.
And I said, and like, it was my partner said to me, like, this was all come, the build up to it. And he said, like, 5 years down the line, if you end up getting ovarian cancer and your consultant tells you, like, we gave you an option 5 years ago to get BRCA tested, we've no screening for ovarian cancer. And like, so I just bit the bullet and went straight in and done the blood stain then. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And finding out that you carried the gene?
At the start, it was traumatic. Mm. Yeah, it was like when I found out I had cancer, I knew a lot about cancer because I would have, if from the age of 18, I would have been attending St. Luke's in Rackar with my grandmother, mm-hmm. and my aunt, had an aunt who had no children. And if my mother couldn't go with her, I'd go with her for her treatment and her appointments to St. Vincent's Hospital. So I kind of knew an awful lot about cancer. So when I was given the diagnosis on today, the first thing I asked was, am I getting chemo?
Yeah.
And when she said no, well, I said, I'm happy.
Yeah.
I said, I'm happy. I said, what'll be my treatment plan? She said, it'd be lumpectomy and radiation.
Yeah.
So that I was happy then. I mm-hmm. didn't worry. The worst thing I was worrying about was going under the anaesthetic.
Yeah. A lot of people fear that.
That's the only thing. Yeah. And then the second time when I had to go in and I was going under it again. But yeah, other than that, yeah.
Yeah. And then being told you have the BRCA, how did you and your family come to terms with that? Obviously, your sisters were then going to be tested.
They were going to be tested. And like, they were, as they said, Rhonda, you got cancer to save us. Mm-hmm. That's the way they looked at it. Mm. So, and if they said, if it comes back positive, we'll all deal with it then. So when it came back, I said, at the start, you went to bed thinking about it. You woke up thinking about it. As I said, it was like a death sentence. But as you grow and you learn about it and you research it and you look into everything, you realise it's life-saving.
Yeah.
It really saves mm-hmm. your life.
Mm-hmm. And have they been tested now also?
They've been tested. They're positive too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was the first to go in to have the surgery, the removal of the fallopian tubes, yes, and the ovaries. And then last year, my two sisters went in and they had theirs done as well.
Okay, which is the preventative surgery.
That's the preventative surgery. Yeah. Yeah.
And Reem, if I move on to you, first and foremost, I suppose I'd love to know, how come surgery? How come breast cancer area as a specialty? What brought you to that road in life?
Well, I have to say surgery was not my first choice when I started medicine. The reason I went to surgery because I loved how you can influence people's decision and you give them a treatment that has an immediate effect. The reason I went for breast surgery because I worked as a surgical intern in one of the country hospitals, and their women in their 70s and 80s, they were attending here in Ireland with a fungating cancer. And I was the intern of the team and the female in the team. And I was called to see these ladies because they won't allow, a male surgeon to examine them. And that made me think is like, God, this need to be changed. Mm. Women need to be able to show their disease treated as much earlier than leaving it because of embarrassment. And that's how I went into surgery, and breast surgery was chosen for that reason. Mm. I was privileged that I attended here, graduated from UCD and went through the higher basic surgical training and higher surgical training in Ireland. Also, I worked in a fantastic unit in Galway with the Professor Curran, whom encouraged me to consider the breast reconstruction, which is the new trend that breast surgeon need to do the breast reconstruction. And this is how I went on to do breast reconstruction, which has made a difference in a woman's diagnosis of breast cancer, and certainly plays a big role now with the risk reducing surgery and immediate reconstruction.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, breast reconstructive surgery has come on so much in the last couple of years, you know, with new techniques and new options available to people. And, we've spoken to a number of people who have sometimes decided to go straight away and have their reconstruction done when they're having their mastectomy, so that they wake up and have the reconstruction there in place. And others have chosen not to. And it is very much a personal choice.
By 100% agree that it is a personal choice. I look at it as you do what's right for you at the time. It's enough that you have the breast cancer diagnosis at that time and your head is 100% thinking, should I have it, should I not? At least at these days, we can offer it as immediate reconstruction. While when I was started, and that was more than 20 years ago, there was no discussion about reconstruction. And now we see younger and younger women get diagnosed, and certainly it affects their lifestyle. And at least when breast reconstruction is offered, is something that women might avail of. It's not the choice of everyone, as I agree, and not everybody is fit for it on immediately at time of the diagnosis. So there are options to be discussed, and I'm glad we moved into this is an option, you know, for women to choose from. Not to say if you don't have the immediate breast reconstruction, you always can have an option to discuss a delayed reconstruction.
That's right.
You just, I have to say about 20% of my patients do not want to think about a reconstruction after a mastectomy. That's it. Despite I discuss it with them on every review.
Sure.
But it is a personal choice. And then people body image and how they see it.
That's right. Yeah. So, a lot of times people, you know, emotionally, they're psychologically, they're just thinking, get the cancer out of my body and I let me heal and I'll worry about that at a later stage.
Yeah.
Others have a feeling of, look, when you're getting it out, make me feel, you know, feminine again. I don't want to wake up, you know, with a mastectomy scar.
Not to say breast reconstruction is not a risk-free procedure.
Sure.
Like every other surgical procedure, it carries a risk. But people, once they are fully informed about what's the outcome, you know, what do they expect? Because everybody thinks they're going to have a wonderful breast, quite natural looking, yet it might be artificial breast because it's a reconstructed breast. Yet now we are moving more towards your own tissue reconstruction, and we have in Bowman quite a big center which they do the DAPE reconstruction, and that is something available, and it's quite good aesthetic results.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose take us through now and talk a little bit about your work with the Family Risk Assessment Clinic. I know that lots of GPs and medics know that it's there and it's available, but I have often talked to people who didn't know that there was that such a facility around. And I suppose it's more for people, and I know hereditary-wise, the risk of breast cancer, you know, it's like 5% of patients have a hereditary link, whereas the other 95 who get breast cancer, and whether they get it young or middle-aged, you know, there is that sense of, well, I'm so young, you know, if I was 30, 35, should I be worried about my sisters having it? Or is there somebody in the background that I didn't realize in my aunts and uncle, in my aunts and grandmothers, et cetera, who had it? So I just think that understanding that this facility is there, that people should be aware of. So
we have it. I have to make it very clear to everybody and all the audience that breast cancer is more common to be a sporadic cancer than a genetic risk cancer. Yes, if you are diagnosed at a younger age, which is under age of 50, certain type of a breast cancer, like the triple negative breast cancer, if there is a woman in your family who might had a bilateral breast cancer, certainly influence more. If you have a first degree, and the number of people affected on one side of the family, this is all plays a role. Also a contribution of other cancer that might contribute, such as the ovarian cancer, sometimes the thyroid, the pancreatic cancer, that might play a role in your genetic risk because it might be associated with another gene in the family that mm-hmm. might have a breast cancer risk. Mm-hmm. One of the things people need to be aware of, basically, it's a breast awareness. It's important to examine yourself and be breast aware regardless of your family history. Mm-hmm. You know, go for your screening mammogram when you are over age of 50, regardless of your family history. And also is important to be aware to find out about your family history, because sometimes people hear about maybe five cousins affected with the breast cancer. They never met them, they never heard about mm-hmm. it. Also, then they find out their grandmother died from breast cancer at age of 35 and they never heard of it. It's important that when you attend these weddings or, you know, family occasion, mm-hmm. you might identify if there is somebody. Mm-hmm. Not everybody who diagnosed with the breast cancer share it with the family.
Sure.
And also not everybody who might carry the gene you know, and get diagnosed and known to carry the gene, share it with the family. Mm-hmm. I've noticed sometimes that some people are ashamed or the guilt of being the first person diagnosed in the family hold it a little bit. I see it in family history clinic in Bowman when people you try to open with them, would you are a high risk, would you go for genetic testing? And they always pull back and say, maybe I'll consider it. I'll talk about it with my family mm-hmm. and come back. It's become now more, we are having genetic testing available. There is genetic centers where you can refer a patient. The test used to take 2 years and, you know, on the waiting list is 2 years. Now there is availability of a fast tracking of certain group of people who are high risk, but also we went into certain diagnosis of breast cancer get to have their chemotherapy up front, such as the triple negative breast cancer. Mm-hmm. And these ladies might want to think if they carry the gene when they are due to have their surgery, might consider a more risk-reducing surgery on the other side. Okay. So these things, technology has improved. These tests are becoming more available, mm-hmm. you know, and fast forward with the result. Mm-hmm.
And just walk me through the process. So supposing somebody is at home, they've gone through a breast cancer diagnosis. They're not sure. They're quite young. So they're in their 40s. Should they, and they have, say, sisters. And supposing they're not sure whether they carry the gene and it's been suggested that they go for genetic testing, who do they contact?
Well, number one contact is their GP.
Sure.
And I would recommend before they even contact their GP, try to draw their family tree. Find out what cancers are there in the family, who's affected, what age they were affected. If they can discover these things, it make the process much more faster and mm-hmm. prompt to get to where they need to be. The GP can have patient referred to be accurately categorized regard their family history risk to the family history clinic. Mm-hmm. And this, we have one embowment whom we triage people into low, medium, and high risk. And the high risk will be basically divided into the group that need a screening with mammogram, MRIs. Some of them might have the screening with mammogram only, but at least we have educate them to tell them what's their category and what's the recommendation of the current guidelines of their screening. The GP can go through a quick assessment through the NICE guidelines, and they can identify if those patients are eligible to be referred to the family history clinic. Also, GPs can have access of those very high risk people whom they might return because they identified the genetic mutation in the family already to be referred directly to the genetic screening service.
Yeah. And I think what you say also is very important. You touched on it there earlier. You know, breast check and the breast screening is available for women who are 50 years and over every 2 years. However, it is very important for women, younger women, and you referred to it earlier with triple negative breast cancer, especially happening younger women, that women, you know, from the age of 20 and onwards need to be breast aware. They need to understand what their normal is, check themselves every month and know the signs and symptoms that they're looking for. And I suppose this is where we came up with the Breast Aware app that's free to download. It shows you the 8 signs and symptoms. It shows you on a simulated video guide how to perform your own self-breast examination. And it sends you a monthly reminder to your phone to remind you to be breast aware. If you know your base normal today, if any abnormality arises, you spot it quickly, you know, you contact your GP, your outcome is a lot more positive with your treatment.
100%. We've seen it from Rona's story. She said she had a mammogram in December, which was clear. So it's just, I'm trying also to emphasize to people, screening is not 100% to prove tools. And it's important people, as you said, to know what's their normal. It's easy to figure out their abnormal. And sometimes people, I don't know what's the normal, what I should be looking for. Your apps is one, but also there is so many leaflets out there. People, they can go on Google. Mm-hmm. Yes, sometimes people might have no much symptoms and screening identify their abnormality. And that's what screening for, to pick it up before it becomes symptomatic. Mm-hmm. But screening is not 100% tool, but fair play that people, sometimes if they are on the high risk group, they might need extra tool on top of the mammogram to identify and clearly assess their breast.
And I have had a lot of people who've said to me, but, you know, we need to have mammograms for younger women then, because if you look statistically, there's, you know, 23% of the population of those diagnosed are under the age of 50, between 20 and 50. But I've always said to them, it's not necessarily accurate. As you say, you know, it's a 90% accuracy of an imaging tool that we have. It's the best we have. But yet, as women get older, your breast tissue is gray and it goes black. So cancer is easy to observe. But when you're young and it's active, white. It's white. It's very difficult to detect white on white.
Yeah. But also, if women... Like screening is not a tool under age of 40 with a mammogram. And if woman feels she wants to have a mammogram, she can definitely avail of it through referring to symptomatic clinic, to the some radiology departments might offer public mammograms, but also they can avail of a private mammogram.
Exactly.
But what's important is if you get to know what your breast like, by all means, you'll pick up the symptoms. If you have a high risk group or a medium risk group, definitely when you get referred to the family history, you get assessed and you will be offered those screening tools. Mm-hmm. It's just that put us into the two prospects: get to know your family history, get to know your body, and try to be a proactive, because prevention, you know, it's the best tool.
Absolutely.
You know, we've seen it in your case. Yes. It's picked up as a DCIS, which is, that's by definition of a breast cancer, is a stage zero, you know, which is
very early. Yeah.
It's a marker of maybe you are at a high risk, but it doesn't mean you have a big cancer. Yes.
Exactly.
And I have to also say, people need to be more, aware that a breast screening, it's a good tool, okay, but it's not 100%. And people feel is, if I have my mammogram in 3 months' time, it's okay, my breast lump will be okay, it will be looked after. Or if I have my mammogram every year, why do I need to examine myself? To be honest, examination pick up way more than the screening.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And we've seen it time and time again with different people who have reported, you know, they had a rash on their breast, but, you know, and they put Sudocream on it for months, avoiding going to the GP because of the cost of going to a GP, and only went subsequently because they were bringing a child and said, oh, by the way, this rash hasn't gone, could you have a look? And lo and behold, their stage of cancer has progressed, unfortunately. So that's why it is, oftentimes we talk, it's more than a lump. It can be, you know, and oftentimes one breast bigger than the other, lower than the other, you know, nipples changing, the rash on the underside, which is the tumour in the inside pulling in, you know, and pain under your arm. So like there's 8 signs and symptoms that we need to be aware of. And it is about empowering people, I say people more so than women, because it does happen to men, much lower percentage. But, you know, you need to know your own body, know your baseline and work from there. You've got to take your own breast health seriously to allow you, you know, to understand. And so that if you do detect something, it's picked up quickly. GP, absolutely.
Yeah, and also what we do in the family history, for example, embalming, it's more of education, how to reduce your risk. Even if you don't, if you qualify as being a low risk person, you need to look at reducing your risk. Because as we earlier said, it's not all your genetics, okay? One of them is your healthy lifestyle, the physical activity contribute a lot in reducing your risk. Your alcohol intake reduce, no smoking. People achieve a BMI, you know, a healthy BMI. And also is important not to expose yourself to a hormonal therapy that it might not be necessary. Mm-hmm. So that is important to consider it in mm-hmm. all aspects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think... And it's in moderation. It's about living life in moderation. You know, it's not saying that we all have to be skinny minis running around the place and be ever so fantastic in our lifestyle, but it's about everything in moderation. And I think once that is in everybody's life plan, you know, we are helping to reduce ourselves from every serious illness that there is. I suppose one thing I remember hearing one of our patient ambassadors, she's a young girl. She was diagnosed at the age of 30 and had her treatment, etc. She did go for genetic testing only because I think further along the line, somebody had been diagnosed. She was diagnosed with the BRCA gene. And at the time, Professor Hill, who she was seeing, said to her not to worry. Initially, she was panicked. She had had her double mastectomy through her own treatment for breast cancer. She then thought, should she go ahead and have her oophorectomy, etc.? So he said, no, you don't need to rush. You know, that there isn't that same, oh, I have the BRCA gene, therefore I have to have everything out and everything off and, you know, in order to increase my risk of survival.
They reckon
and
if you're over 40, isn't it? 45, that's when the ovaries...
You had your ovaries
removed. I did,
removed.
Yeah.
Yes. One of the things is we have to say is we recommend that you definitely have, if you tested the BRCA positive, you must go into your screening, high risk screening, have your mammograms, have your MRIs. You know, the issue about when do I have to remove my breast to reduce my risk? Your risk will definitely reduce significantly. It will never be zero.
Yeah.
Okay. That's one thing. The other thing is sometimes it's difficult for a woman to have all these changes done when she is 25 or 28. And there is no right time for people. It is right time for that individual.
Sure.
Okay. Now, one of the things is we say try to finish your family. You know, you might avail of the breastfeeding, which we encourage it to, you know, then you decide about, okay, I've done all these screening. I'm tired of keep doing the mammograms, the MRIs, and I would like to have, you know, risk reducing mastectomy. Then you are right in the set of mind to get the journey of mastectomy and breast reconstruction if you wish to. But then there are people up to their age of 70 and they don't want, or maybe they discover their BRCA gene when they are in their 50s and they said, you know what, I'm now in my 50, I'll continue. If I develop cancer, you know, I'll deal with it. And in fairness, I won't be worried so much about the people who are BRCA positive because they will be screened and they will be looked after and cancer will be picked up at a smaller size and good outcome. I will be more cautious about the people who might test BRCA negative, but they still have a high risk group, which they need to continue with their, you know, screening, because sometimes they get so much confident, I don't have the gene, I don't need to continue with these mammograms and MRIs, but we still recommend it for them. Okay. If you don't carry that genes, it doesn't mean you are not a high risk. And that is important. Also, we emphasize here so much about the BRCA gene, but there are other genes in the, you know, out there that it might increase the high risk of a breast cancer with them. Some of the moderate risk, and people need to be aware of it, and some of them are the high risk. Also, is important to understand sometimes other risks that can increase your breast cancer, not necessarily your family history risk. And we know and we see them in our high risk clinic in Bowman, is the people who might have a chest wall radiation as some at a younger age for treatment. Majority of them is for lymphoma at younger age. And those people will be a higher risk group. They need to be watched and screened at a younger age than the 50. So that's another group. But I really look at people need to be aware, family history contribute a smaller risk, but if you don't have a family history, it doesn't mean you don't get cancer.
Absolutely.
And that's what sometimes people, when you assure them you are a low risk group, they nearly thought, that's it, I'm never gonna get cancer. You know, and that is not, we all need to be
just be aware, vigilant and be aware of, you know, understanding good breast health. And Rhonda, looking at you now, and I know our listeners can't see you, but I met you last Sunday at the Great Pink Run in Leopardstown in horrendous weather. You and a tribe of women with you, which was fantastic to see. How did you get on?
Oh, we had a great time. Myself and my cousins, we all walked, but my aunt, she's in the Inner City Running Group, so a group of four, and I think it was about 15 of them, they all done the 10K. Yeah, so it was brilliant. It was great.
It was fantastic. Yeah. It's fantastic to
see. Very emotional at the end of it.
It's very emotional. Yeah. Very emotional to see the amount of men, women, children, buggies out there. Everybody.
All ages.
Like over 4,000 were in Leopardstown last Sunday. It's just phenomenal. Yeah. And then as I stood on the finish line, to see the amount of faces that are so determined, but so like tears of joy coming across the line, whether it's for themselves because they've been through it or they're doing it for somebody else. I mean, it's just amazing to see everybody
at
there.
One stage when we were doing it, there was a girl and our dog, and it was just like, you know, it was heart-wrenching looking at them doing it, and she done it and she got through it. It was brilliant.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. Yeah. There was a lady who came in, a lady called Ali. She's a young girl. She's only in her 20s. She's currently going through chemo and she walked it with her mom, and her family had come in ahead of her and they were just waiting for her to cross the line. Yeah. So it was fantastic.
My aunt, you know, who she ran it, and my cousins, they went through before I got there, and they were at the finish line waiting. It's brilliant. It is.
Oh, it is lovely. It's lovely. It's a real community of a pink tribe. And I suppose, look, we go on to Kilkenny next week. We have another 2,500 there. There's about 2,000 who have done it virtually, which is fantastic, because what we see is that, you know, with over 8,000 people taking part in this event annually, and now that we're back in a physical sense with a hybrid model of physical and virtual, I mean, we will raise over €500,000 euros for our research, because through the sponsorship that we get with Glanbia and UPMC and others, we cover our costs. So all the entry fees and individual sponsorship comes in and goes directly to fund our research, which is phenomenal. And the research we're doing at the moment, which is one of the challenging areas that we see, is that area of metastatic disease progression to the brain. You know, we have supported triple negative and we continue to do that. But this particular form of breast cancer is what is the most challenging and causes fatality. So we're really, we're doing a big collaboration, our research team in Ireland with a team in the States, looking into brain metastasis and seeing, can we flip that switch where we prevent the tumor from traveling to the brain? If we do that, I'm confident that, you know what, we really will transform this disease into a long-term treatable illness. And that's what we want.
Yeah, it's just progress all the time, isn't it?
It is, like it is. And it's constant.
Talking about the surgery, yeah. It's just your memories come back. My grandmother, like, she would have had a prosthetic and we used to play with her. Like, we'd be putting it into it, you know, yeah, like yeah. Children. Yeah.
Things has changed so much, you know, from surgery was the only option and then maybe radiotherapy and a hormone tablet. It's just the treatment had changed so much. When I started, is mainly the surgery, the radiotherapy, the hormone tablets. Now it's mainly breast conserving surgery, our aim in the surgery modules, and also the immunotherapy, the chemotherapy, the shorter course of radiotherapy. And there is so much treatment even for metastatic disease. Mm-hmm. Before, people, when they were diagnosed, they were told maybe you have a year, 2 years. And now you can live with the bony metastasis for years, you know. So that's how things has changed. And it's only changed because of two reasons. First, the patient who volunteered to be part of research. And second, because of the research that funded and the trial that made all this progress. So I think we're going to reach one day, hopefully in our lifetime, when breast cancer will be treated with the tablets and certainly you will be identified.
And I think that's what we all really want. You know, we're seeing clinical trial and it's one of the remits of Breast Cancer Ireland is to invest a lot more in clinical trial. We have been in the past investing in scientific discovery in the labs to get to a point where they make these fantastic discoveries, but now we want to accelerate the discoveries in the lab into clinical trial. If we get it into clinical trial, we get new therapeutics, new therapies that are available to treat different aspects and different subtypes of breast cancer. And that's where we need to go. And I think it's a really bright future. You know, we looked and we talked in a previous podcast with people who are 20 years out and where their treatment was very, very different. Today's treatment again is really, really different. And it is moving in a positive direction, which is great.
I have to say one thing. I'm proud to be part of the Family History Clinic in Bowman. We have set it as a separate clinic and is working in a progress with all other specialty. Also, I have to acknowledge that I think the whole country and the NCCP has identified that there is a difference in family history screening in all over the country. And that's why they are now setting a national guidelines with regards setting family history clinic and assessing patient with equality and basically identified patient risk with the same tool. So it will be no discrepancy around.
Absolutely. And just so that our listeners understand, NCCP is the National Cancer Control Program. So for anyone that's interested, but that's really good because it is important to have governance and guidelines and one set of guidelines that everybody adheres to because it gives you a standard of care that's excellent. Which is fantastic. So Rhonda and Dr. Ream, thank you so much for joining me today on our podcast, More Than a Lump.
The information in this podcast is based on the personal stories of those we have chatted to. If you are concerned in any way, please contact your GP immediately, or you can contact us at breastcancerireland.com.